But I don't want to waste too much time even on the lighter side of things, but you brought up the Hebrew language, one of my favorite topics. The Rambam says in Pirush HaMishnayos, in a Perek Elvis, when it says, Avizar b'mitzvah kal k'b'chamura, that you should be careful about a big mitzvah, a small mitzvah, treat them equally. So he says learning the Hebrew language is an example of a mitzvah kal. So one of the most fascinating experiences I had, this already goes back maybe close to 20 years, I was on an airplane, and they were handing out the meals. And the two flight attendants, two men, were going down the aisle, and I hear them reading off a list. Sakmeloto, sakmeloto, sakmeloto. So after they got to me, I said, you know, excuse me, sir, I know a little bit of Hebrew. I never heard the word sakmel, but what does that mean? It looks to me like I'm from Mars. SKML, special kosher meal, sakmeloto. Okay, that was a new level. That was a new level. Okay, let's get down to business. Chav Vavam and Beis, we are right after six lines after the lines get wide. Let's start with Pligubar of Mastomar Ukva. I think that's where we're holding. Okay, Pligubar of Mastomar Ukva. Rav Masna Mar Ukva had the following debate, following difference of opinion. Tarvai Mishmei Davua the Shmua Velevi. And they were passing on this machlokes in the names of Avu the Shmua Levi. We don't have an identification as to who said what, but Chav Vavam and Beis. That's Chagiga. A little bit, yeah, earlier. Okay. So the shayla, what's the shayla? What are they arguing about? Chadamar, one of them said, Kol Shiva Korea, La'achar Shiva Mosif. V'chadamar, Kol Shloshim Korea, La'achar Shloshim Mosif. So this is about the parameters, what we discussed last week, as far as when you have to make a brand new act of Kriya upon hearing the news of a second loss of a relative, and when it's sufficient to make a tosefes, which we said we hold halach l'maisa, it's enough if you just add on a little bit, that constitutes a satisfactory kriya under certain circumstances. We gave one exception. One exception is that you cannot add on to a kriya done for a parent. So if it was two brothers, in theory you could have one, a full-size tefach kriya, and then add on a little bit more. Now the Gemara qualifies it a little bit. The first opinion says, kol shiva korea la'achar shiva mosif. The first 7 days within Shiva, if the second death occurs during Shiva, then Korea, then you must perform a brand new Maisa Kriya. Only if it's after Shiva, Mosif, only if 7 days have gone by since the original death, since the original Kriya, then it's permissible to get away with just a single, a Kol Shivu, just a little bit.
Do the second Kriya on the same Beged?
Not just the same Beged, but you can continue tearing through that spot. Okay?
So during Shiva, if somebody else passes his mace, you have to tear another
brand new kriya. Correct.
And then if it's after Shiva, you can just add to the one you already
have. Exactly. Okay. So that by the way, teaches us, just the concept of being able to be yotzei kriya with just a little bit, right? If we brought from Sukkim last week that fundamentally this is how you tear, right? You grab your baget, right? So it's a full size tefach. So the Rav explained, based on this, you see that the Maisa HaKriya could be very tiny, could be very small. What your result is, the outcome, is actually more important. The outcome will be, if you do a Maisa Kriya and Sach HaKol, the grand total is a size, an adequate size of what should be a Kriya, if you present a full tear, Al Pi HaLacha, that's sufficient. So the sheer, the size of the tear is not a din in the Maisa Kriya, it's in the Chefza of the Kriya. So as long as I do a little bit of a Maisa, but what I leave behind is a bona fide Kriya, that's adequate. So even though I'm just going a little bit, maybe a centimeter, but as long as it's Mitzur, if it combines with a larger presentation, that's sufficient. Okay. So this opinion says you still have to wait until after Shiva. If it's within the first 7 days, you can't be yotze with a tosefes. Now, based on what I said, we're going to have to explain why that's so in the first 7 days, right? Because if you don't have to do a full tefach, it should be adequate whenever you do it. So again, let's start from the beginning. Pligubar of Masna Mar Ukva. Rav Masna and Mar Okva had the following debate. V'tarvaya mishmei davu ad Shmuel v'Levi. And both of their positions reflected the opinions of the earlier Amoraim, Shmuel and Levi. Chad Amar, one of them said, kol shiva korea la'achar shiva mosif. The first one said, as long as you are within the first 7 days, a new kriya will be required. If it's after 7 days, and you hear about the loss, you can just add on to the previous tear. V'chad Amar, kol shloshim korea la'achar shloshim mosif. The other opinion, same concept, but just, you know, raises the ante a little bit. The amount of time you have to wait is not 7 days, it's 30 days. It's not sufficient to wait 7 days to then be able to with a small kriya. It's only if 30 days have gone by since the original death, then you can be able to say with a Tosefis after 30 days.
The second kriya, during Shiva. Hmm?
What's that?
The new kriya, during Shiva.
During Shiva, everyone says you have to make a new kriya during Shiva.
In a different place?
In a different spot. Different spot. Okay? But they're arguing as to why, you know, whether it's 7 days later or 30 days later. So first we're going to explain. It could be the same baggage, right?
It should be the same baggage.
It does. No, that's up to you. That's up to you. That's your prerogative, right? Nowadays, again, generally speaking, people are going to throw out the baggage after they tear it. They'll put on a new one. Okay. So first, before we get into the, you know, some of the underpinnings, let's just hash out this machlok. Maskevel or Bzeira. Reb Zera asked the following question. Manda amar kol shiva korea. The first opinion who says that during shiva you must tear a brand new tefach. Amai. Why is that so? Why is that so? What's the logic behind that opinion? So he suggests, delo nitan l'sholo. Because within the first 7 days during shiva, you're not allowed to be sholo. Remember, sholo is the term for an amateur type of sewing of the kriya. During Shiva, when a person is obligated to tear Kriya, for those first 7 days, they cannot pin it up or put it together in any way whatsoever. After Shiva, we said, they can be sholo, that they can make it this, temporary ad hoc type of sewing. Okay? That's for the first 7 days. After Shloshim, then you're allowed to sew it up entirely, which is called Ichui, to be Ma'acha. Unless, if you remember, the list of special instances we spoke about last couple of weeks, parents, Sefer Torah that was torn, a Rebbe, those, you know, we'll say tier one Kriya, that you're never allowed to repair. Okay? But again, if it's not tier one, the first 7 days, you can't touch it. After 7 days during Shloshim, you may not repair it, but you can temporarily stitch it up. Sholo. Okay? So the Gemara says, why does he say you have to make a new kriya within the first 7 days, delonitan l'sholo, because you're not allowed to sew it up during those first 7 days. Remember what we spoke about a couple weeks ago? If I were to add on during the period of time when I'm not allowed to touch that tear, all it looks like is I'm elongating, I'm making the one, that the original kriya, a little bit longer. It's not self-evident that this is on a new mace. Oh, but after 7 days, what does that imply? After 7 days are up, after I now have permission to repair it, so then there's significance to the fact that I'm persisting in that kriya. I could have had it all tied up. No, I'm not going to do so, even though I could. Okay, but the fact that I had permission to tie it up and I tear through it, there is now significance to my action. But in the first 7 days, where I'm not allowed to tie it up anyway, it looks like I'm just extending the previous tear. Does that make sense? It's not clear? Please tell me. Okay. So Rav Zeira asks, if that's the svara, if that's the reason, if the reason why you need a new kriya during those first 7 days is because I'm not allowed to repair that tear, so there's no significance to increasing it other than making the first tear longer. Elohada amar mar ha'isha sholalto la'alter. But we hold in an earlier sugya that a woman is allowed to stitch up the kriya immediately. Why is that? For tznias, for she, her dignity, you know, takes precedence. Once she satisfies the mitzvah of kriya, she's allowed to be sholalit. Truth is, and this happens sometimes at a funeral, what the Gemara says, ideally, after a woman tears the beged, she'll actually reverse the beged. If it's the type of beged that, you know, you can do that, so that the tear should not be visible in the front. Nowadays, we inform the women in advance that they should make sure they have some sort of, you know, layer of clothing underneath the baggage that they're using for Kriya, So just, you know, to be prepared for that. But strictly speaking,
sometimes they kid up the, I don't know.
Yeah, so that would be the same idea.
That
we just said
a little safety pin to keep it flap up, so that's
right.
Not
so that's what we're talking about. During Shiva, this is during the first 7 days, right? At the funerals during the first 7 days, you can be sholel. So sholel includes many of those informal type of repairs.
So that okay? Could be right away.
Right away. So the Gemara says, So wait a minute. If a woman is allowed to be sholo la'altar, right? Lahada amar mar ha'isha sholo la'altar, right? Hachanami. If a woman is allowed to sew it up right away, then what would follow is if she lost two relatives one after another, she would be allowed to just be mosif in that kriya because she has permission to tie it up. The whole reason you're telling me that during Shiva you have to add a new kriya is because I'm not allowed to repair it during Shiva. But a woman who's an exception, she should be able to just be mosif. And nevertheless, you said categorically, you cannot be mosif during Shiva. So what's the deal with the woman? The woman, according to your svara, should be allowed to be mosif. Answers the Gemara, no. Hasam yishem kvodishu. That's a special exception. The woman, it's not that she really has permission to tie it up. It's not that in reality, her, we'll say, window of time that the kriya has to exist for is already up. It's not. It's just that, you know, we override the rules for the sake of tznias, for the sake of kavod isha. But it's not because in reality she's allowed to tie it up. Okay, so it's an exception. But for a man who's not allowed to tie it up whatsoever during Shiva, he cannot simply be mosif, because that looks like he's just adding to the first kriya. But after Shiva's over, since that can be sewn up, then being mosif in it has a new relevance to us, and is it's clear that he's doing it for the purposes of a new mace. Okay, now truth is, if you look at the Rashi on our page, Rashi says the only time you have permission to be mosif is if you actually tied it up, if you actually repaired it a little bit. I'm saying, the way I explained it up until now, and this is how we pass in Shulchan Aruch, just having the permission to tie it up is adequate to allow you to just be mosif. According to Rashi on the page, that's not sufficient. If you want to demonstrate that you're actually doing a new kriya, you actually have to tie up the previous section and then just cut through that and a little bit more.
That makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense, right?
Because otherwise, how can you? Nobody's counting.
Right. Okay. So, good. You fell into my trap. Makes a lot of sense. Please keep focused, okay? See if in the next two lines you can come up with Rabbi Akiva Eger's Bam Kasha to disprove your svar, okay? All right? Now, if you can come up with something Rabbi Akiva Eger has to challenge, you're in good company, okay?
But, good company.
Okay, you're good. But between the lines there's a very, very strong kasha, okay? What Mark is saying is that what really, at least, you know, to the onlooker, is going to be recognizable is if you repaired it and then you tear through it. Okay, that's a gesunta maisa of, you know, of kriya. But if you're just leaving it open and I'm mosif a little bit, if anything, that how do I know that you're really doing a kriya altogether? Okay, so see if you can figure it out. Continues the Gemara. Let's look at the other opinion. Right, the other opinion said you have to wait 30 days. Other opinion said you have to wait 30 days. So it continues the Gemara. Manda Amar Kol Shloshim Korea, the opinion who said that any time during the first 30 days, it's not enough to be Mosif. You have to do a brand new Kriya. Amai, why is that so? Why should you have to add a brand new Kriya if it's within those 30 days? So we can suggest Dilo Nitan La'achoso. Because, as we explained earlier, lo nitan lachoso, you cannot fully repair, fully stitch up, ichoy, the kriya for an entire 30 days, right? To temporarily pin it up for 30, for the, you know, after Shiva, that's okay. But you can't fully repair it until 30 days have passed. Oh, elo la'aviv li'imo, de la'olam, lo nitan lachoso li'olam. But parents, you're never allowed to fully stitch it up, like we said before. Hachanami. So too, even after 30 days, you should not be allowed to be mosif on the parents. Right? We said earlier, you never yotze for parents just with a little bit. right? But you are allowed to add on for a different mace onto the parents. So shouldn't it be true, based on what we're saying, that if 30 days have passed, you can be mosif on the original kriya? Because after 30 days are up, I'm allowed to mamish tie it up like it was brand new, right? I can stitch it up like it was brand new. Shouldn't that allow me to then just be mosif on that kriya? Because that's as a legitimate, we'll say, deadline, endpoint, at which we would say the mitzvah of kriya has been satisfied, right? Because I'm even allowed to stitch it up after 30 days. So wouldn't you say that I'd be able to co-opt that by being mosif, right? When I can tie it up entirely, then I should be able to use it to combine with my new Tosefis. And nevertheless, when it comes to a parent, that's not correct. That's not correct. Because you can never tie it up again. So we should say the halacha is that when it comes to a kriya that you did for the parent, a Tosefis never works. Right? If you're never allowed to tie up the parent's kriya, then you should never be able to do a Tosefis if your logic is correct. So answers the Gemara. You might have figured this out already from the previous back and forth. Gemara says, no. Hasa mishum kavod, a quote of the imahu. That's a special halacha. Special halacha superimposed on kriya, kibra aim that you can never tie up the beggar that you tore, if it was for the parents. Fundamentally, are you allowed to tie it up? Have you satisfied the mitzvah of kriya? Yes. But as a demonstration of kibra aim, forever and ever you have to leave this beged unsung. But again, be'etzem, fundamentally, I would be allowed to sew it up, and therefore, being mosif on such a tear could be recognized as a brand new tear for that additional relative. Okay?
After
30 days. After 30 days.
So it's more like halachically, you're not allowed to do it, or you are allowed
for the parent.
Yeah, but many years, because the covenant,
right. It's a new din. Exactly. It's not a din in kriya, it's a din in kibbutz of aim. So the dinim and kibbutz of aim, even though they're superimposed on kriya, don't shake up the mitzvahs of kriya themselves, the din of kriya itself. Okay? So what's your b'kidei is kasha? You got it? Yeah, yeah. Let's see.
So you can't, you can do it even if you can't tie it up. That's
why. So even though you can never tie this up, but I can still be mosif, right? So you see what we said, Rashi on the page holds that the only time Tosefes works for Kriya is when you actually tied up the previous Kriya. And then I cut through it and add on a little bit more. But here we find an instance explicitly where the Beged is not going to be sewn up because it's for the parent. And nevertheless, after 30 days, it's sufficient to be Mosef. So that would, according to Behavior, that disproves the opinion of Rashi on the page. And therefore we pass in Shulchan Aruch that you don't actually have to tie it up. Just the theoretical possibility of being able to tie it up shows us that we've elapsed the period of kriya, right? If I sold this, right, like you spoke about last week, selling it to the locale, it's not allowed to sew it up. But if it's after 30 days, he is allowed to sew it up, right? So once you've elapsed that time period, then a new kriya is recognizable, and it presents as a kiyum for the mitzvah of kriya.
But it's not really recognizable because you could think it's the same kriya.
So that's where we started. But I guess if time has gone by, and people know, okay, maybe not every single person is going to know, but it's easily accessible information. It's on public record. We'll see when, you know, how long, is he still staying Kaddish for his brother? He's not staying Kaddish for his brother anymore. Oh, now he's tearing? So good. So that means he's doing a Maisa Kriya that locks into the previous Maisa Kriya to have a sufficient share. Okay?
So can you say that, I mean, obviously Rashi knows that you can't sew it up for the parent. So he's saying that whenever you could sew it up and you didn't sew it up, then you can't just add on.
Exactly.
That if you could have sewed it up, you had to, and then done the second
period. Right. You're right. That's the svara of Rashi on the page. The question is that he's going to have to answer. I don't have an answer for this. But that is going to have to still contend with the fact that our Gemara seems to give a situation where for sure you didn't tie it up because of kibra vein. You can't tie it up.
So the Rashi is paskening that whenever that it is possible to tie it up, then you have to tie it up.
When it's
and
possible.
And then you can do the second kriya. But in the case where you can't tie it up, then it doesn't have to actually.
The only problem, I hear you, the only problem with that is in Lundus. I mean, if we want to understand what's the mechanics of Rashi's opinion, if the Lundus of Rashi's opinion is that until you tie it up for real, so then the Maisa Kriya is lacking. Because all I'm doing is adding a centimeter. right? Only if I tied it up and then I and the action is there that I cut through a beged, if that's the Pshan Rashi, so then it's going to be missing in those situations where I'm not allowed to tie it up again, right? Unless you'll tell me Rashi could entertain a case where a guy tied it up and he wasn't supposed to, and the whole thing is b'dieved, but that would be a chiddush. That would be a chiddush. Okay, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Does it make a difference if that second kriya is for a parent versus the other parent?
The first one was a...
Let's say you have two parents. So let's say first with one parent.
Right.
Or let's say the second parent.
So no, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think so. The parent, I think that based on what we saw last week, it shouldn't make a difference.
Okay.
Shouldn't make
a difference. That you have to do a truly a separate kriya for what covered for parents.
Right. No. So we saw a chiddush last week. Not everyone was happy with it. But if you lose both parents, bevas achas, at the same time, you hear about them at the same time, you can do one kriya for both of them. Right? So it's a question of categories. A tier one loss, so to speak, of a parent is one group. Then tier two is the rest of the krovim. You know, and so forth. Okay, let's cover some ground. Even though you should know, I have a big yitzhara to there's so much to see here. Baruch Hashem. But okay, maybe we'll come back to this time afterwards. Tana Rabbana, new topic. Hayotzi bebeged karua lefnei ames, hareza gozul as hamesim ve'es hachayim. The Brisa says that someone who goes before a mace, meaning he shows up at the funeral, and he's wearing a torn beged. He's already wearing a torn beged. He is stealing from the people who are dead and from the people who are alive. So the Rambam gives a little more details as to, you know, the Gemara is speaking metaphorically over here.
What's the circumstances of beggar karua?
So either he had it from last week when he already lost the...
Is this a karav or just somebody who went to the funeral?
Good question. Let's stick with a simple case where it's a karav where everyone agrees he has an obligation to tear kriya. Okay? So let me read you from the Rambam. The Rambam says... Chol hayotzi bebeged karua lefnei mesim. Klomar. Okay? What are the implications of this? What does he have in mind by walking around with this torn beged? Shukara ataleim. He's trying to exhibit that, oh yeah, I already did my kriya. He shows up to the funeral, the rabbi is tearing kriya. Oh yeah, rabbi, I got this already. I took care of it at home.
Pre-torn.
Okay. Right. Okay. Hareza gonev das habrios. So he changes it from gezela, because it's not really gezela. Gezela, you know, the Gemara tells us, the pasuk indicates that gzeila is a very specific action of taking something by force, right? Even, you know, if we say, oh, you stole my sleep, right? You're you know, goniv shena, right? It's not really gana means you did it clandestinely, you were hiding. Gaza means you took by force in broad daylight. So the Ram changes it to goniv das brios, okay? Gnevas das, we've heard that term before. You're tricking people. Vizilzel b'chvod achayim v'mesim, and he was mezalzel. He disgraced. He did not properly offer the respect that is due. Here the Ram says both to the chayim and the mesim. Mesim, we understand the reason you tear in kriya is because that's a sign of respect. We suffered a loss, so the way you demonstrate the loss, the fact that you feel the pain by tearing kriya. Okay, how that's mezalzel v'chayim. That's food for thought.
So what should he do?
No, he should show up to the funeral and tear kriya in response to the mace.
He came already with kriya.
He bought one of these pairs of ripped jeans in the mall.
So
you know.
What should he do? He should cover up.
No, he should buy. He should get a new beged or
he's within shiva.
Yes, but we know that there's ways of tearing torn garments. Right, move over three etzbos, like we said, and tear a new kriya, like we've been talking about the whole night. Right.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to do kriya in this mace.
He's a faker. He showed up with a beggar that was torn, and he's claiming that he already did tear kriya. You don't have to tear for me again. Okay?
There's an ethical case where this could happen. Because let's say a son is by the parent who dies.
Yes. Right.
He does kriya right there, and then Levi is the next morning.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, true. So that guy. No, we're not talking. We're talking about a person who's mamash a faker. Mamash a faker. Okay? Hayotzi beveg karua lefnei hames. He's doing this on his own as a trick. Okay?
You're not the way I see him.
You're saying you want to be Muhammad's
case.
Somebody
came with the beged karua because he's an avil.
He's from another.
Oh, okay.
He's an avil.
Okay, so he may still have an obligation to perform kriya. We're talking about someone who...
He doesn't have to do kriya in this mace.
Is this his relative?
No, maybe not.
So I'm telling you this. Okay, oh, yeah. That's what Ron was just asking.
Right.
Let's say let's work for argument's sake.
Yeah,
He's supposed to be. The whole idea is he's supposed to be tearing kriya.
Okay.
Supposed to be tearing kriya. He's tricking us because he's wearing a beged that was already torn. Okay. Okay? And the Rambam says, number one, he's mezalzel on the mace, that we understand. He's mezalzel on the chayim. Okay? So we could debate that. Let's assume the Rambam is being machadish, that I thought Geneva's das. You know, Moshe Feinstein says, off-quoted in circles that I hang out sometimes, that if a person cheats on a test, a person is dishonest in their coursework, in earning a degree, at whatever stage, it's pretty scary if you take Ramosh's logic all the way through. So he says that every penny you make going forward, you know, you got into medical school, okay, now you get a big paycheck, you know, for being a doctor, and I only got the GPA that got me into medical school. I only got the job, you know, I only got the residency. I only got whatever it is that I'm looking for by virtue of the fact that I fooled somebody into believing that I knew information I didn't know, or I performed well on the test, and so on and so forth. So he says that if you cheat on a test and you get something as a result, you get a job, you get some other accolades or benefits, so then whatever you benefit from that is essentially a form of Geneva, right? Because you fooled the person. That's Geneva's Das. I didn't steal any money. I didn't break into someone's house, you know, when they were sleeping and steal the money, but Geneva's Das, okay? Pretty scary. So here the Rambam's telling you something else, perhaps. This is my suggestion. I don't know if this is true, but he says, goes at your mezalzel in the mesem and the chayim. Mezalzel in the mesem, I understand, because I'm not giving you the appropriate final respects by Teren Kriya on that occasion. But I'm also mezalzel in all the people who are alive. To trick them to, you know, as we would say, you know, like you played them for for a fool, right? You're also being mezalzel on everybody else by taking advantage of them. Okay, that's a chiddush.
But you could say mezalzel chayim is because when you go to Levaya and you see the family doing kriya, it's an emotional thing to watch the family doing kriya.
Okay.
So if you're already coming in, already torn,
okay.
You're taking away from the fact that when you watch a person doing kriya by the mace, mm-hmm. and you're attending
very
Levaya,
good, very good. So I would term what you're saying as follows: there's a concept of being nosei ba'olam chaveru. Everyone in your family is mourning a loss, and we're all going through the process of avelus and kriya, and I'm just on the sidelines. So if I don't take part in the same actions, the same expression of grief, so that's a zilzal. I'm better than you. I don't have to do this. I'm not going to lose any money on this. You know, I'm trying to reword what you're saying, but okay, either way, that's not what I wanted to focus on. The more important thing is the Rambam says it's gneivas das by fooling people, goni das abrios by convincing them that I've done something that I haven't. It just reminded me, so I'll try to do this quickly, but someone's son-in-law was here for Shabbos. Actually, a member's grandson-in-law was here for Shabbos a couple weeks ago, and they asked me the following question because they were reading in a leaflet that was given out for the parsha with some interesting shilas. The question was, I don't have too much to do with this industry, but maybe you know people who do. If you know someone going to China, and they can bring you back a knockoff designer coat, that goes for $1,500 in Nordstrom. Okay, they can get it for $150. You know, the black market, you know, fake counterfeit brand name merchandise in China. So is it okay to do that? Okay, so it doesn't sound right. Okay, it doesn't sound right. So I took the question to Rav Schechter. I wanted to hear what he had to say. So he said, that's what we call being cholek im haganav. If someone else does the dirty work, okay, but I still, you know, I'm not an accomplice to the act of Geneva itself. Mm-hmm. But if I'm going to be his business strategist as to how he can make the most money off of his ill-gotten gains, so that's also a problem. That's also a form of being machzik yedei or revera. He's not going to go to China and do it again, because the more that I help him and validate and justify his actions, so I have a chelek about Geneva also. So the guy told me, okay, I understand. Next question for you. My wife, he said, often gets gifts. People give her counterfeit merchandise, you know, from this type of...
What do you do?
Do I have to give Musser? I said, Musser, I don't think Musser is going to help over here. You know, Musser only... You're only supposed to give Musser when it's going to have some positive impact, you know? But can I wear these clothing, you know, the clothing that has, you know, this designer label on it? And it's not. So, Rav Schechter said, Geneva's Das only applies in, you know, there's a ritual like this in clothing. Geneva's Das, strictly speaking, applies when I'm going to gain something from. So if I'm gonna dress in a certain way, that's gonna get me a job. I'm just, you know, maybe there's an example of it. If I dress in a certain way for my interview, and I wear my designer outfit. I can't afford this bag in a million years. But they're going to hire me to be, because they think I'm like, you know, I used to be CEO somewhere else if I'm dressing like this. Or I show up in a car, you know, like I'm dressing the part. Isn't that how it goes? You know, dressed for the job you want to have, not
dress
the job.
Right.
So that's the idea. So, but if I'm not going to gain anything, I'm just going to walk around, you know, and be full of myself that I'm very very fancy. I'm wearing these clothing. So that's maybe it's not a good idea, but not gneivas das. So here you have an example where the Rambam, at least when it comes to the mitzvah, so here maybe you are gaining something because now the rabbi's not going to come over and tear your beged. So maybe this type of gneivas das, the Rambam calls it gneivas das because you actually stand to gain from it. Perhaps. Okay. Either way, I don't recommend it. Okay,
no,
clearly.
This one also has it's something's counterfeit, that's also the legalities involved.
Oh, so this person did all the research. United States Customs regulations allow you to bring in one item of counterfeit merchandise for personal use. So they will not stop you at JFK. They'll stop you for an apple. If you bring an apple from Israel, you know, they'll stop you. But if you bring in your Armani fake suit, okay, one of them, you're okay. Okay, but otherwise, it would be a problem of Dina Nochusatina. You're right, that for sure, 100%. The reason I didn't get onto that, you know, if the United States law says it's a problem for a Jew also. But here, the customs actually.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that. You didn't know that. Okay. Me neither. So that's interesting, right?
Next time you go to China, make sure you get
similar.
Right. Boris is saying you could at least create a legitimate defense for yourself and say, oh, I don't know, it looks like the real deal. You know, I didn't know I couldn't get a Rolex on St. Nicholas Street for $15. You know, it looks real. You know, but it is on the books. United States Customs Legal Code. You can bring in one personal item. If it's not for resale, yeah.
By this thinking, then you can't wear a borrowed jacket or something, because it's gneivas das.
Meaning
others think that it's yours and
borrow a tuxedo to go to a fancy affair. I don't know because.
What
are
you
going to
get out of a fancy
affair?
To right, I have to think about that. I don't. I mean, because there, it's a one-time thing. You know, I wear it once, and I'm gonna wear it again. People rent a tuxedo. That's not unusual, right? So I said to Rishatur, this was a little more, for argument's sake, a little more humorous. I said to him, let's say I want to wear a fancy suit, so that this way they'll give me shlishi. You know, because they'll come, you know, for COVID, but if they think I'm a fancy guy, they'll invite me to be the chairman of the board. So Rav Shachter said, well, okay, then maybe they'll get more money out of you for tzedakah, because don't they hate, you know? Not so bad. Okay.
If once in a while, rarely, you have to attend some black tie event,
right,
and you don't want to invest into it because you know you're never going to have another
right
opportunity to
right
wear it, so you rent it or something.
People rent tuxedos,
so
right? Is there a market for rental of high-end suits?
No.
I don't think so.
But you're not trying to cheat anybody.
Right. So that's what I mean. That's what Rosh Hashanah was saying. If there isn't any concrete gain that you can claim from, but so that's why I was trying to relate this to the Rambam. The Rambam still calls it gneivas das. The Gemara seems to call it gneivas das, perhaps because bottom line, you are up one suit that you don't have to tear anymore. Right here, there is an afkamina. It's not just people are going to think you have a nice suit or you don't have a nice suit. Here, you're going to save yourself the money. You're not going to have to tear kriya. Okay. Let's continue. The Gemara says, "Oh, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, this is the end of the brisa." If someone says to his friend, Reuven, tell Shimon, I'm on my way to visit my father, he's sick in the hospital. Can I borrow your coat? Coat's not a good example. Can I borrow your shirt? The halach matzah shemes. And then when he shows up, turns out his father already died. Okay, I don't know why it would be any different if he shows up and his father lives for an hour and then he dies. I'm not sure.
Maybe,
to think about that.
Maybe that's what I mean. He went and.
Doesn't sound like that. Yeah, matzo shemes korea, okay, you can tear it umaacho, and later you have to tear it up again. Assume the pshat over here is after whatever period of time goes by, right? Now the key element of the case l'chora seems to be that he had permission. The
right
friend knew where he was going,
right?
Right. If you tell someone your father's sick, so the odds are that he's at least at some compromised position, he may die. Mm-hmm. Then when he comes home, he returns the article of clothing that was torn. And he has to pay him back for the tear, assuming that even if he's ma'ach of the beged, it's still not 100%. It's still a beged that has some sort of, we'll say, scar on it, you know, from being torn. So he has to make up the loss. We spoke about this when we were talking about the chayalim, tear and kriya, and paying back the Israeli government. Clearly, you see from here that if you don't suffer some loss, and this is relevant for what we were saying before, if you don't suffer some loss, why do I have to pay him back? Let's say the guy says I'm mochel. Okay, if he's mochel, it's a different story. But there's an obligation not just to tear kriya, but specifically to lose money over it. Right? We could have easily said that in the same way that I am implicitly giving permission to tear kriya when I give you the beged, I'm also implicitly understanding that this may be the end of my shirt. No, I have to pay you back for it. Right? So that implies that if you don't suffer a loss, there's something missing from the fulfillment of the mitzvah of kriya. Okay, v'im lo hodio, but if you never told him that you were going to your father, ha'rei zelo yigo, but then you're not allowed to touch it. Then you're not allowed to tear kriya on this beggar. Okay? So what's the pshat? If he doesn't know that I'm going to see the father, why can't I tear kriya? We relate to this is if you walk into shul, right? And you forgot your talis, you forgot your tefillin. So halacha is I'm allowed to walk over to someone's talis and just, you know, even if we can debate this, but even if it says do not take without permission, okay? But in theory, I'm allowed to take his talis, I'm allowed to borrow his sefer, because the Gemara has a concept. Fundamentally, a person would be very happy, you know, if you take advantage of my property sitting there in the shul. A value I'm not using right now, so go right ahead. Okay, the Gemara talks about is that true? The postman talks about is it true by everything? Right, could be by tefillin, could be by svarim. I'm not sure it's true anymore, but even as recently as the Mishabura entertains the possibility if you're gonna use the article and it's actually going to be diminished in value, it's going to get damaged a little bit. And over time, it's not going to be worth as much. Maybe the person wouldn't be so quick to lend it to you. I think one time the Chazanish was very makbid to, his position was that if you want to use a sefer that was used during the year on Pesach, you have to check every page to see if there's any chametz inside. Okay, our minhag is that is just don't bring it to the table. Don't bring it to the table over Pesach, but unless you really know that there's crumbs in the pages, you could, somewhere else, not near the table, you know, you don't have to check every single page. Chazanish, and you could see this in the Chaim Kanievsky's house, they used to put like sheets covering the bookcases, the parts that were not so they would make sure to check a shas, check the main things that they needed for the week. So one time, for whatever reason, the Chazanish didn't have the sefer he needed. It was a Gemara Zvachim. So he said, bring me a Gemara Zvachim. He said, we don't have one, we don't have anyone that was checked. So someone had a great idea. There's a guy, he's a chassan, just got married, he got a brand new shas. He hasn't used his shas too much. He just got married last week. We'll bring you the zvachim. So okay, bro. So Rami, it was Chol Moed. Chazanish is down to learn, and as was his derech, you know, just like his brain just kept working. He started taking notes on the side of the page. Huh. You know, so they said, Rebbe, you know, it's not your Gemara. He said, don't worry, he'll be very happy. This will be worth a lot of money one day. Which reminds me, one more story. I think this was at Rabbi Willis Chasana. The Rav saw the ksuba that had been written. He saw there was a psul on it, and he tore it up. He said, can't use this. It was a fancy calligraphy ksuba, whatever. He said, no, it's possible, tore it up. He started writing a new one by hand. So as he was tearing it, he said, oh, but he spent so much money on the clay. He said, don't worry, this one's going to be worth a lot more one day. Okay.
So I guess in a case of like, it was like taking someone's lulav and esrog, not on the first day.
Right, so there, so we got to talk about that.
By shaking it, right. You know.
So Ron is pointing out something very important, which is it's going to get us into a whole different discussion. But in short, there are two dinim that we have to evaluate when it comes to mitzvahs. One is the question of, do I need to own the cheftz of the mitzvah?
Right.
And the second is, even if I don't, but if it came to me through an avera, mitzvah bab avera, it's going to be possible, right? So let's look at this guy. This guy borrows the shirt. He didn't tell his friend where he's going, right? And then he tears kriya, in theory. He didn't follow what the Gemara says to do. The Gemara says, don't touch it. Lo yigabo. When you get home, you'll take off the shirt, you'll put on your own shirt, you'll tear kriya then. But as long as he's wearing that shirt, he can't tear kriya. So if he did, what's halacha if he did? So Shach says he's not yosei. He's got to put on his own shirt and do it all over again. So there are two ways to understand that. Either the pshat is because mitzvah baba avera, if you perform a mitzvah through an avera, then you're not yosei. Okay? Or this is going to be a little bit tricky, the first day of Sukkot, it doesn't matter if you have permission to use lulav and esrog or not. You actually need to own it. You need to own it on the first day. Kachtam Lachem. Lachem teaches that it has to be Mishal Lachem. We have a handful of mitzvos that you know, that follow a similar rule. Okay, but if so, there's a discussion of matzah gzula. If I steal matzah and I eat it on Pesach, so there I don't need to own it, but I'm still not allowed to eat it if it doesn't belong to me. So it's a mitzvah bava aver. Okay, so here to tear it when I don't have permission to do so would be for sure mitzvah bava avera. Some suggest maybe the issue is that it doesn't belong to me. I'm a gazlan, right? If I take something without someone's permission, then I'm a mazik, right? I'm destroying it. But normally, if I use something without someone's permission, I'm also nikra gazlan. The Shulchan Aruch has another case. It's a gemara on Shabbos daf kuf hey. What if a person doesn't know the halacha and he tears kriya on Shabbos? Tears kriya on Shabbos. What's the halacha? Hears about a relative and he's all fermished and he's all stressed and he can't control himself. He doesn't realize. Even if he did know it was Shabbos,
did he know that kriya is usher on Shabbos, or he thought you were allowed to tear kriya?
Let's say he did, and he's like, I know it's usher, but you know, okay. The parent died. I got to tear kriya. The Gemara does talk about even that extreme case. Okay, Ron is pointing out that if it was a shogeg, if he didn't have full awareness of what he's doing, so at least the aveira is mitigated. Right, but the Shulchan Aruch says, "Hakoreya b'Shabbos al meso." Someone tears kriya on Shabbos for his mace. Avo pishachil al Shabbos yotzei de kriya. Even if it was mamish machal Shabbos, he's still yotzei. So he's going to get the death penalty. Okay, but at least he got kriya. Okay, at least he got kriya.
But destruction is not
malacha. Oh, okay. So yeah. The Gemara talks about that. Isn't it makalkel by definition? If I'm destroying something,
sure.
So the Gemara discusses. This is part of the sugya of melacha shein esrich legufa. If I'm tearing the garment, but not because I want to have a torn garment because I'm going to sew it up again afterwards, but because I want it torn. So it's almost the antithesis of the melacha. But at least according to, I think definitely according to Rav Yehuda, who says that melacha shein esrich legufa is chayiv, then the fact that I'm doing a tikkun, sometimes even if it's not, even if it is normally makalko, usually tearing is a destructive act, but if there's a positive outcome that I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of kriya, then it's not objectively a destructive act. So in this case, I could be chayiv. Okay, but you're 100% right. This is Mamish Mefurish Gemara in Shabbos Kofei. Ask your question, okay? You got Rabbi Kivager, you got the... It's not a benefit, but it is it's still a constructive action, right? So it's not the same rules as...
You're not destroying for the sake of destroying. Right. You have a...
Right.
The mitzvah kriya technically is a point of destroying a baguette. Or making a tyranny.
Right. The mitzvah is to be destructive. Exactly. The mitzvah is to be destructive. Right. Mitzvah is to be destructive. Oh, okay. So, but Lamaisa, here's the chiluk. Here we say that if you tear kriya on Shabbos, you're yotzei. But if you tear kriya with a stolen beged, you're not yotzei. Why don't we apply mitzvah bava avera to tearing kriya on Shabbos? Hear the kasha? Why don't we apply mitzvah bava avera to invalidate the kriya that you made on Shabbos? So the Yishalmi asked this question. We'll finish in 2 minutes. Yishalmi answers because there's a fundamental difference. Mitzvah bava avera, the Yishalmi holds, requires the cheftza of the mitzvah to be in conflict with a cheftza shel avera. Okay? In other words, if I have a beged that is going to be used for kriya, but it already has a status of a beged hagozel, the mitzvah is already labeled and designated and associated as a cheftel shah avera. There's no way that it can then turn like in kateger nasa saneger. Some akron actually use it. It's like in kateger nasa saneger, right? We don't use the horn of a cow on for the shofar on Rosh Hashanah because of the cheta egel. Okay, in kateger nasa. You can't take a cheftel shah avera and turn around for. Oh, but what about the Gemara actually uses the case of matzah? If I steal the matzah and I eat it, right? Or let's stick to the kriya example. So when I tear kriya, so I read to you from the way Levush quotes, "Ein zeh mitzvah b'aver dol domin matzik zula she'inu yotzeba." If I ate the stolen matzah, I'm not yotze. The hasam guf hamitzvah, the eating of the matzah is the avera, because when you eat the matzah, you're stealing from him, right? But here, the beged that you're tearing is not an avera of Shabbos, right? It's you're doing a maisa kriya. And the kriya is ena mitzvah, ela mitzvah sheikore hacholok shulavish bo vacholok enu gozel. The mitzvah is to do a maisa kriya. But the beged itself, is there anything wrong with the beged?
No.
The beged is not a cheftza shel aveira on Shabbos, right? Let's say you carried the beged through Rishus HaRabim. That might be different. Right? But here, the beged itself is not a chafta shel avera. I'm performing an avera on the beged. Masha inkein, if it was a stolen beged, like we started with, if the beged itself is categorized in that way as it's used for the avera, it's what comprises the avera over here, then it can't be turned around to use for mitzvah afterwards. Okay, but Shabbos, the avera of Shabbos doesn't, we'll say, get into the kish because of the beged in the same way. It's superimposed on the beged, and it's not a mitzvah of avera. That's how the Yishalmi understands it. Okay, no. Great. Yeah.
I think last time or 2 weeks ago, whenever there you mentioned the question if you can tell a kriya on a uniform which is not used.
Right.
So that's basically the same case.
So the postman answered, I think it was Rav Gorin. Rav Gorin said that it should be self-understood to Tzahal that if you send a guy out to war, there's going to be times when he's going to have to tear kriya on his uniform. So it's almost like you told your friend.
If
it's American, if it's American government,
American or,
okay.
Or
you're gonna have to ask the chaplain. You're gonna have to ask the chaplain. The doctor. Okay. So anachanam, right? That could be a different story. That's, we spoke about that when we were talking about the scrubs in the hospital, right? The scrubs in the hospital, you may not have permission if they don't belong to you. That's. Have a good Shabbos, everyone. Thank you for joining us. See you next week, Meretz Hashem.
Maariv, we have six to Maariv.